Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour for August 3rd, 2017. And just a note on hurricane season to begin with, this is always humorous. This is a, if you were a relief comedian, like a late night talk show host, and wanted to talk about science, there would be no end of the material. But the hurricane season, once again, a flop. There have been four storms and five depressions to date, which is pretty much nothing. You could create that with a little fan out in the ocean. There have been little activity in the Pacific Ocean, but we're nearing the midway point of the hurricane season, which is August 15th, coming up pretty soon. So unless we have about five hurricanes in the next week, which, you know, everything's possible, then they're going to have to readjust their predictions. And as I said, the National Hurricane Prediction Center, their boss quit a couple years ago, Dr. Gray. I gave him a lot of respect for doing that, got up to the podium and said, nothing they do there has any validity at all. And he led that group for about 20 years. And his right-hand man, they got up and quit. That just surprised me completely. He said none of the computer analysis, none of the predictive analysis that they developed over that period of time has any validity at all, and left. And that's what I'd been saying, is, you know, this idea that hurricanes are formed by warm water. Let's look at some physics here, some science. For a organized energy system naturally occurring to form from some energy source is a tall order. See, the natural state of things, if you say you cut off the energy source from that hurricane, it would dissipate very quickly. And so the water cools slightly as the hurricane moves over it. But what's that from? That's from the air of the hurricane evaporating water, which we know is happening. There's a lot of water coming off the ocean evaporating. And that's the cooling effect. That's not what drives the hurricane. Now, the example I always use, it's a good example. Say you don't know how cars work. And you see the car going down the street, and somebody says, how's this car? What's the propulsion system in this automobile? What's the modus operandi that makes this thing go? And you look at it, and you go, well, it's got this pipe sticking out the back end, and there's gas coming out of there. That gas coming out must be what pushes it down the road. And, you know, if you start saying this and get enough PhDs to believe that, then you could pretty much try and pawn it off on anybody. But the reality is there's a pretty big motor in that automobile that burns combustibles that are high energy content fuels, gasoline, diesel, whatever. That's where the power to move the car down the road comes from. The superficial outwards evidence is a little tube coming out the back of the car with gas coming out of it. It doesn't make a lot of noise. It's not like a rocket, you know. And oddly enough, when you're sitting at the stop sign, the gas is still coming out the back of the tube. So why isn't it going down the road? Well, I guess you got your brakes on. That could be one explanation. But even if you take your brakes off, if the car is in neutral, you still have gas coming out the back end, but it doesn't push the car down the road. So there's some contradictions. Let's just put it that way. Same way with hurricanes. If you look at a hurricane, this storm is a massive, massive cauldron of energy. And to believe that, now you can make calculations. You can see the amount of cooling that occurs when a hurricane moves over a region of water. And a simple calculation would show you that that's not the amount of energy in the storm. That the amount of energy that it has derived, that it may have derived from moving over the ocean and the cooling that's going on, it's like watching the car go down the road. So now you're going to get scientific about the car. You go, okay, we're going to see this car. We're going to make some measurements. And you go up to the car, and you see the gas coming out there, and you look at the total amount of matter coming out the gas or the exhaust tube of the car, and you look at its velocity, and you go, you know, this, according to Newton's laws, we need about a ton of gas coming out of here per second and at a much higher velocity to make this car go down the road. Because the car is steel, a couple thousand pounds of it, and gas is gas. You know, the density is much less. So you need a lot more gas coming out this tailpipe to make this car go down the road. Something's wrong here. Something's wrong. Something's wrong with our theory that the gas coming out the tailpipe pushes the car down the road. So you can determine this simply from momentum, conservation of momentum, not enough gas coming out there to push the car down the road. You know, and you can do that with the hurricanes. Not enough energy being lost from this slight cooling of the ocean to drive this massive storm. Number two, the second law of thermodynamics says that if you took away the energy source, whatever it is, whatever that engine is that's driving this hurricane, it would dissipate in a matter of minutes. In other words, you can measure that the eye of the hurricane, down at the base of the eye in the hurricane, there's a very low pressure cell. Well, it's like a vacuum. Okay, it's a vacuum. And what's the hurricane doing? The wind is coming into that vacuum hole, spinning around. And why does it spin? Well, that's what gas and water and liquids do, what we call Newtonian liquids. Any like water vapor or liquids. Anyway, the hurricane is basically consisting of Newtonian liquids, so they follow Newtonian laws. But they're rushing in at over 100 miles an hour trying to fill that vacuum. So if you cut off the power source to the hurricane, it would end in a matter of seconds. Okay? So how does this water that's on the surface of the ocean, cooling slightly, drive energy into this storm? Well, first of all, there's not enough of it. And second of all, if you took away whatever the real power source was, that storm would end in a New York second. So once again, it does not, this idea that hurricanes are formed from warm water doesn't follow the second law of thermodynamics. It would be like saying, hot summer day, let's open up the refrigerator and cool our beer down. Boys and girls, you know, this is so beyond the pale. This is so askew from any reality, scientifically. Anyway, on my soapbox here. But when they predict, this is my point, when they predict the hurricane season, they have computer programs, and this is why Gray quit. They have a list of factors, and they used to publish this on the internet. They don't anymore. I haven't been able to find it. If you do, please send it to me. But they used to list all the factors. High-level wind shear. El Nino is one of their favorites. That's a heating of the Pacific Ocean. And if it isn't heating, well, it's a cooling of the Pacific Ocean. That can cause hurricanes too. But the reality there is the Pacific Ocean weather has to go across the entire Pacific Ocean, across the entire Malaysian landmass, across the Indian Ocean, across Madagascar, which is a mini continent in itself, and then across the entire continent of Africa, and then out into the Atlantic Ocean. So Pacific Ocean weather has changed. It's been modified. It's been beat on. It's been completely altered before it ever gets to the Atlantic Ocean. So to say that heating of the Pacific Ocean by something called El Nino is causing, or some kind of major factor in hurricane production, is beyond absurd, but they get to use El Nino for everything in the kitchen sink. Something happened, must be El Nino. Something didn't happen, that's El Nino too. Anyway, excuse me. I mean, this is just good humor, but once again, they have failed to make an accurate prediction with the NOAA, our illustrious National Weather Service, which, by the way, is now owned by the Rothschild banking community. Why would they lie to you, the public, about something like weather and space weather? All of that absolutely controlled for your listening and watching pleasure. Homogenized, blended, pasteurized for public consumption. And I should throw NASA in there too. Anyway, excuse me for being on my soapbox on this, but it is one of the most ludicrous scientific fake news stories ever. And they continue with this every year, with this charade. And these people get paid for this, and they have a job, PhDs all lined up in a row with their skinny little ties on TV. I love this one story, just one more hurricane story. You know, the Yucatan Peninsula is one of the flattest places on the planet. I mean, it is a plain. It is a, if the water were 10 feet higher, it wouldn't be there. Let's put it that way. And one night on TV, I'm watching, and this guy, skinny little Thai weatherman's on TV, and a hurricane came in off the coast of Yucatan. Well, if you understand what the continental shelf is like off of Yucatan, I've been there, I've lived there, I've studied there, I've studied the ruins there, I'm very familiar with the whole area. And if not, you could look on a map if you didn't happen to have been there. It's plains, flat. And so anyway, this weatherman is talking, and the hurricane comes in, and it, what happens is it shorts out to that big sand barrier that's off of, basically, if you've been to Cancun or up there, Isla Mujeres, one of those places. It's just a long, very long continental shelf that sticks out. And so the hurricane comes in, it shorts out there, and just dissipates. And the weatherman goes, "Yeah, it's those mountains of Yucatan that stopped the hurricane." I'm like, excuse me, there's no mountains in Yucatan, Mr. Weatherman. Anyway, okay, enough of that. On to the next topic. Excuse me for that diversion. But let me just quick give the real issue with hurricanes. And I explain this in my weather book. I explain this in my other work, my weather work. But hurricanes are driven by the vertical electric field. And what happens as the clouds roll off of Africa, there's kind of that nub over on the west side of Africa. And the hurricanes, the weather systems in Africa, the cloud systems, the cumulonimbus clouds that are already connected to the ionosphere during that period in August when our vertical electric field is extremely active. That's, by the way, the aurora season in the northern hemisphere is August, because we're immersed in the return August current sheet. That's the return current sheet of this capacitor that surrounds the sun, which, by the way, is very weak right now, extremely, extremely weak. The sun has not done anything for 6 years. A good 6 years. It has no sunspots right now. I'm not sure if the one is on the far side of the sun, if that's still there. But basically, you look at the sun right now, you don't look at the sun, but I mean, if you look at the data regarding the sun, yes, never look at the sun with your eyes. And just a quick note on the upcoming eclipse, I'm not going to be there myself on purpose. I think it's going to be rather a zoo. Anyway, so I am planning not to be there. But if you go, make sure you have proper equipment and make sure you buy some good solar protection. There are many web pages. I don't have a word about it on my web page because some people are going to go out and look at the sun with their eyes, which is dangerous. So do not look at the sun with your eyes. That's the only thing I'm going to say. Make sure you have proper equipment. I'll also say that this is a prime event for amateurs to get out there with their protective equipment on their telescopes and redo the Eddington experiment, and we could prove that general relativity is incorrect in this event, because there would be thousands of amateurs out there taking pictures of the sky and showing that the bending of light around the sun is not due to gravity, and show that it's an electrical effect. And based on my induced electric dipole redshift idea, which is one of the core theories that I published when I was at Cornell in 1979 to 81, that was one of the core pieces of the reformation of astrophysics. And this could be proven. By the way, you can prove that concept in the laboratory, something that general relativity lacked. And that's why Einstein himself never bought into general relativity. It was his idea, and he didn't agree with it. So anyway, back to hurricanes. So what's going on with the hurricanes is these storm systems, so you have, it could be up to some of them 50,000 feet or higher, these cumulonimbus cloud systems that are coming across Africa, already connected to the ionosphere, but on the underside, there's a lot of lightning that's hitting ground. Okay, so the ground is a part of the electric circuit there. So these move off over the Atlantic, out into the ocean. Now there's no ground because they rapidly get into deep water. So all of a sudden, what's going on with the electricity down at ocean level? Because now this cloud system is over the ocean. Well, it ionizes the air. That's the first thing it does. The second thing that happens is that electrical connection to the ionosphere, which is electrons, it's the westerly moving electron belt that's in the ionosphere, moving westerly across the Atlantic Ocean and around the entire globe, is this electrical current is connected to that, so the ions, which are positive ions down on the surface of the ocean, start trying to find a path upwards. And I've watched many, many, many hurricanes forming. And you can see from satellite, I mean. And you can see the upper tips. Now, this might be a vast cloud system that covers, 1,000 square miles. Massive, sometimes bigger cloud systems. Or it might be a small cloud system. But anyway, the very highest point of those cumulonimbus clouds is where it starts to connect. And that's where you see the eye start to form. Because what happens? That's where the ions want to move upwards to follow the electric field. So they do so, and what happens? They start to spin. And that opens up that eye, and the spinning action is the ion wind moving upwards. And as it gets up to the top of the eye, the water condenses out of the air. It spills out sideways, and that's what we see as the hurricane cloud cover from above. That's where we see this classic hurricane shape as the hurricane spins. And the other thing is that current, if you use the right-hand rule of electromagnetism theory, you have your thumb pointing up. That's in the direction of positive current going up the eye of the hurricane. You have your first finger pointing out away from you. That's north, and the direction of north. And that's the Earth's magnetic field. And then your middle finger comes out perpendicular to those two, to the left, to the west. And so that's why hurricanes and electrical systems move west. They're following the jet stream. And when they get out over the Atlantic, that's what drives the hurricane to continue to move west. And then there's other factors that if there's a weak electrical current, if it loses it as it moves westerly, then it can spin out and move north, and then it gets into the northern jet stream, which is east, and that pulls it north and then back east. So anyway, that's what causes hurricanes, but it's this severely powerful electrical current shorting out the vertical electric field. And by the way, that's the same exact electric field that Tesla was tapping into with his Tesla tower that everybody denies. Everybody says, oh, that's for transmitting power. Well, where was he going to get the power to transmit, boys and girls? Nobody seems to be able to tell you that little piece of their theory. And anyway, it's the exact same source of energy that Tesla was going to use. But remember, they went down out and tore down his Wardenclyffe Tower because they were afraid it would fall into the hands of the Germans in New York City. Well, let me tell you something. If New York City fell to the Germans, you may as well, you know, kiss this country goodbye. They'd have the port. They'd just move in. And from there, it would be a cakewalk till you got to L.A. And they'd probably be coming in doing the same thing in L.A. So, you know, back in the 19, you know, whenever that was the First World War, by the way, not the Second World War. But that was the excuse they gave for tearing down the Wardenclyffe Tower. No, the excuse, the real reason, is because Tesla had discovered how to get free energy, and J.P. Morgan and the boys and Chase and all the money people at the time realized that that was the true source of, literally, in the technical sense, not free in the sense that you put a box on a table and it sucks in energy out of the universe and you can plug your toaster into it. No. Free in the sense that once you set up the infrastructure to tap into this vertical electric field like Tesla was doing, you didn't have to buy gas or oil or petroleum or coal at the time. They didn't have nuclear, of course, at the time. But those people, of course, dove into nuclear head first too when it came along. And same people running that industry as the oil, petroleum, etc. industry. And so forcing on the public this idea that we have to burn high energy content fuel. I remember, this is a little story, I remember in my little town I was living in at one time that some guy was coming around talking about Tesla power. And, you know, most of the Tesla stuff, I admit, is hack stuff. But the power company was going crazy, and they actually put a thing in the newspaper saying, don't listen to anything about this Tesla stuff. It's a hoax. It's dangerous. It's communistic. It's related to Russia. I don't know. They said everything they could to dissuade the public from believing any of this darn Tesla stuff. Anyway, interesting. Okay, on to other topics here. Somebody sent me this. It just came in yesterday in an email. NASA wants to hire an environmental specialist. This is a real job position, $187,000 a year, to prevent NASA from polluting outer space. Excuse me. We have 200,000 space junk objects the size of doors of spacecraft flying around the Earth at 17,000 miles an hour. It's just a junkyard up there, thanks to NASA. They've polluted all of the planets, Venus, Mars, many times Mars, and other moons of the solar system. Now the Cassini mission, they're shooting it. They're going to dive it into Saturn to get rid of it. Why would they do that? Why would they destroy a spacecraft? Because maybe somebody could hack into it and get control of it and use it and get real data? Could that be possible? Why do they have to destroy the spacecraft? Or the other one, there was one they dove into Jupiter, the Galileo mission. You know, when they got done with that, they crashed it into Jupiter. What's the story? Why do they have to do that? It's because somebody could literally get a hold of that thing, you know, strike up the band again, get it working, and get real data that NASA is hiding, the real data. So anyway, but it's funny, this position also wants to make sure that aliens don't pollute Earth. And so, I mean, it's literally the job description. I'd apply for it, but I'm busy doing real things. NASA has already polluted. It's one of the bones of contention. There was a woman there for a while, had some kind of position at NASA to prevent that, you know, pollution of outer space, etc. And excuse me, but the position had no power. It was weak. It was a, you know, it was a token. It was a facade put out there to give you the belief, to make you think that NASA gave a, you know what, about pollution of space. But anyway, the issue at Saturn and Cassini mission is that was, like the Galileo mission, was ripe with data, electrical data, all kinds of other things that you could look at, and completely sequestered. And there's the old saying that if you don't look for data, then you're probably not going to find it. So all of those years with billions of dollars spent looking in the wrong direction. And one of the things, just to describe one of the things that these satellites could have easily provided us the data with regarding these planets, because they were right in there, close and personal to these planets, is once again the induced electric dipole redshift. The idea that light is bent and redshifted by the non-uniform electric fields that surround these objects. We saw that, or I saw that, in the Pioneer data. When the first Pioneer got to Saturn, this is when I was at Cornell, I had access to data. And the, you know, this was something that I only knew because I was in meetings there watching the data come in. The to transmit the data back, this is a technique they use in telecommunications, is they have an oscillator on the spacecraft and an oscillator on the ground and Earth at the telescope where they're receiving the signal. And it's a highly tuned oscillator. They're called Marconi oscillators. And so they're the exact same frequency. So you, like when you turn in your radio, you turn on a certain frequency and that locks you into that and cuts everything else out. It's a narrow filter that filters out everything else except that channel, and that's why you can listen to the radio. Same way with outer space, but space has a lot more noise in the signal leaving that spacecraft is very, very, very small because they don't have a lot of power. So it's a technique, tuned oscillators, one on the spacecraft, one on Earth. And so what they noticed is as the Pioneer spacecraft got to Jupiter, the radio signal, which is electromagnetic radiation, just like light, redshifted as it came to Jupiter. And going, ooh, what's going on here? It's redshifting. You got to retune our receiver here to maintain the signal. And then as it passed Jupiter, it went back to normal. And so they go, and I'm in the meetings watching this. And they're going, oh, that must have been due to general relativity, the mass of Jupiter. But no, excuse me, boys and girls. The mass of Jupiter is nowhere near enough to be something like the equivalent of a black hole or a supermassive celestial object that would cause a general relativistic redshift. It's just not there. It's not in the cards. And so that explanation didn't make sense. So, of course, what did they do? Swept the data under the rug. Never surfaced. How do I know about it? Because I was there. I was there when the data came in. I saw it. I saw the data. I saw the people talking about it. And then it all went bye-bye. Data sequestered, swept under the rug. This is so typical. But the Galileo mission, now the Juno mission at Jupiter, and the Cassini mission at Saturn had all of the equipment to test, because it's going in orbit around these planets, both Jupiter and Saturn, both have non-uniform electric fields because they have ongoing fusion in their atmosphere, and you could test the and get very exacting data from the spacecraft Marconi oscillator as it's circling and orbiting the planet. And as it approached and as it went through space, you could measure the redshift of the sun. You can measure the various factors from the sun, because as you get farther and farther away from the sun, it redshifts more and more, something you could measure from the spacecraft. But none, as I repeat, none of this was done. And this gets right to the core of the pillars of all of physics. NASA has blown it once again. And now they're going to crash the spacecraft into Saturn with bacteria on it, with it's been going around in space, what kind of viruses it's going to pick up, and crash this thing, destroying it, billion-dollar piece of equipment that still is working. It's still working, boys and girls. And they're going to crash it into Saturn. Like I say, they don't want somebody else to hack into that baby, get a hold of it, and then start operating it to get real data. Destroy the messenger. Wow. Okay, enough of that. Just a quick mention of this. Was it Senator Miller, a woman from, I think, Washington State? She was talking with Mattis in a congressional hearing, and she comes up with the following statement. A lot of times these senators, when they get in front of somebody important, that's a chance for them to shoot out a message direct to them from their constituency. And she was there talking about the pollution that the military is doing in Washington State. And I don't know if you've heard about the issue at Whidbey Island, where that's tremendously polluted the water, and the military is using some kind of chemical foam to put out fires, and they have all of these military operations. I believe it's specifically the Navy. And these poor people that live in this paradise have had their water severely polluted. And so anyway, that's another issue. But I believe her name was Miller. If I'm misquoting that, I'm sorry. But she's a senator from Washington State, confronting Mattis, and says the following. 80%, I think it was 80 or something like 85 or 90% of the U.S. youth of military age, so this would be like 18 to maybe 24, 25, I don't know what their upper limit is, but certainly 18, maybe even 17, I don't know, whatever that limit is, of youth in the United States are not fit. Now, this is like the vast majority, 80%, I'm going to use that number, it might be a little different, but it's high, of the youth of the military age youth of the United States unfit for military service because of obesity, drugs in their system, legal problems. Those are the big three, and then a laundry list of others. But obesity was first. 80% of youth are unfit for military service. Well, I tell you, about a month in boot camp would take that obesity problem down to the wire. But 80% are unfit for military service. Can you imagine that? I mentioned this on John Moore's show, and John, being a military man, he said, yeah, that's an indication of the state of our nation. That's just from that point of view. If you look at other points of view, like what have these people been doing with their lives? Wow, this is not good. If you haven't noticed, I'm a Trump supporter. I don't support everything he does, but it's a very complicated job. But the idea is to get rid of this destruction of this country that was rampant under Obama, and that would have been tenfold under the Hillabeans. This country has some serious problems, and this is one of them, that the educational system has absolutely failed. How can you have everybody in the country, all the kids in the country, when they get done with high school, they're supposed to read, write, and do some basic math? 12 years of sitting there? Is this a failure, a massive failure on a national level that is unparalleled? This is the youth of the country. These are the people that are going to be here working and doing things in the future. And if they can't think, they can't analyze, they don't know anything about the history of the country or feel any greatness because of their being part of this, Oh, my goodness. Just a side note on that, I saw the speech Trump gave to the Boy Scouts, and it was a breath of fresh air. I'm not going to go into that whole deal. But whether you like Trump or this is not political, because I don't think Trump is, he's not Republican, he's not Democratic. He's just, for once, a citizen of this country who's not a paid-for politician, you know. And by the way, on the Russian hacking deal, it's very clear that, and it's well known in the investigative circles, that the hack on the DNC was inside. It was an inside job. The data was not hacked. It was downloaded into a thumb drive, and that thumb drive is where all the information was passed. And so, and they know who did it and who took the thumb drive to England to give it to Julian Assange. You know, this, and plus it was on protected server. Everybody and their fat Freddy brother was in that server. You know, so, and my vote was not affected by anybody. Anyway, I don't want to get political here, but as some people have told me that voted for Trump, they said, I just wanted to throw a hand grenade in the middle of the political system. And he was the biggest hand grenade you could throw in there. And there's a, you know, an expression that, you know, to destroy this political system where the, both parties work for the same bankers, you know, if you couldn't figure that one out, then I think you better go back to maybe first grade at least. So if you couldn't figure out that the two political parties that ran this country and still are trying to do that, total, talk about collusion, to mess this country up. Anyway, it's important because in the scientific sense, this country is a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. If you look at the military, they have to deal with reality. In all other parts of science that are visible to the public, there's not a shred of reality at all. And so this bleeds into the scientific world. It's a disaster out there scientifically. So it's part of the same process. And so I talked about this before. I'll just briefly mention that Trump, when he signed the bill for the budget for NASA for this year, he gave him everything except one project to go to, I think, Enceladus, the icy moon of Saturn, to search for life. He didn't approve that for some reason. And it might be because they would pollute that planet that potentially has life on it. And there again, NASA doesn't know what it's doing. It's never, NASA has never, back to this topic of polluting space, NASA has never disinfected its spacecraft. Can you imagine that? They have these guys working in clean rooms and everything so they don't get dust particles on the spacecraft, perfectly hermetically sealed room. But before that baby goes off, you have it in the rocket, it's sitting there in the nose cone. That's when you have to take this spacecraft and disinfect it so that it cannot bring earthbound bacteria, viruses, whatever, snot from guys, you know, picking their nose on the job. I don't know. But you can't put that stuff out in outer space. And they've been doing it since day one. So they've been polluting. And so anyway, it's a good thing that they did not support that so-called search for life on Enceladus. I think it was Enceladus they were going to, moon of Saturn. But anyway, it may have been a different moon. I can't remember. But anyway, Trump gave NASA the entire budget. And they were all standing there smiling like, wow, everybody else got cut to the bone. The EPA being the biggest one and other ones. I listed that on a show a number of weeks ago, or maybe a couple of months ago. But NASA got the full budget. They got the pretty much 100%. But the caveat is that in 7 years, they have to be financially independent. In other words, they got to run it like a financially sound, profitable company. And I'm sorry, boys and girls, but ain't going to happen. NASA is so top-heavy they have more administrators, they have more chiefs than, you know, there are certainly more chiefs than Indians, as the old expression goes. But, no, NASA is not in a million years. They don't know about business. They don't know how to make, you know, they made Tang, supposedly. That was a big development. And by the way, Tang is one of the worst things for you, they found out. Just like Teflon causes cancer, used on pans for decades. Anyway, the caveat of what Trump did is very intelligent. Gave him everything. Said, okay, first year, boy, just like the kid going off to college, we're going to give you everything the first year. But in 7 years, you know, credit cards ending, no more. So you won't see NASA. The name NASA will be in the footnote in the last page of appendix of the history books in 10 years. And by the way, NASA, remember they were going to go to Mars? Well, last week they announced they're not. I think I mentioned that because they don't have enough money. There's some bacteria on Mars theorized that could be harmful to humans, so they decided not to go. This past week, it was a very beautiful picture. It was taken with a fisheye camera of a guy in Iran. And this made the international kind of like circuit of, you know, things that were, I don't know if they were tweeted or whatever, but it showed what is known as sky glow or air glow. And what it is a lot of times around dusk, especially, or through the night, you get this. Basically, it's an electrical glow. We're in the discharging the solar capacitor, and a lot of times it's during one of the moon phases where we have a new moon or 2 days after the new moon. But the article in Space Weather said that this was a chemical reaction with gravity waves. Now, there again, simple Simon Silly science. Stuck in your face from a Rothschild-controlled entity called spaceweather.com. They own the weather.com channel also. And so this is another sign of Earth acting like a comet and that standard science is simply in la-la land. But what the article claims, a chemical reaction with gravity waves. Let me explain something also about gravity waves. You can get gravity waves when you have, say, near the galactic nucleus, where you have massive stars coming in and smashing into other stars because it's very congested there. Say two objects the size of our sun come in at hypervelocity and smash into each other. Now you're going to get a gravity wave. But in Earth's atmosphere, gravity waves? Not going to happen. I have to mention the issue with the Russian sanctions. Now, Congress passed a bill to have Russian sanctions. This is only going to bite the United States, and it already has in the scientific sense. Russia said, okay, I guess you guys don't get to go to the International Space Station anymore. Better get your boys out of there. Because we ain't going to give them a ride home. So the U.S. has no space capability. They depend 100% and have for a long time. Because what year was it where they dumped the space shuttle? 2009? Or I forget, you know, during the Obama era. He cut the funding on that. And so the U.S. has been completely 100% dependent on Russia to get their men and some supplies to this International Space Station. So Russia turned around and says, no more free rides here, buddy, and get your guys out of there because, you know, we're going to lock the door and throw away the key. Well, they're going to still go there and use it, but it's not going to be available to the U.S. So the United States has lost their ability. And not only that, Russia is launching stuff all the time, including for our military. Our military doesn't have a space capability. Can you imagine that? They're worried about Korea sending an internet ICBM over here, and our own military does not have space capability. I mean, this is beyond bizarre, excuse me. But the idiots in Congress, let me just go a little bit into economic analysis worldwide. Russia has its trading partners. It has its own SWIFT banking system. Not SWIFT. SWIFT is the Rothschild banking system for transferring money internationally, which is required for trade. There are now other ways around that. But for the major international business that goes on, the SWIFT system has been the core center method of sending money back and forth. Okay, for trade. Well, Russia and China got together and last year actually initiated their own international banking system for transferring their money. Putin, the reason they're giving Russia all this grief is because Putin pulled out of the international banking empire of the Rothschilds. And of course, that's what they've done with anybody who's done that. Venezuela, Iran, Russia, Brazil, they went down and during the Olympics got it back. They had a soft coup in Brazil, threw the guy out of office, or you know, accused him of corruption. Well, gee, that wouldn't be too hard to do in Brazil. And so, anyway, but Russia has its trading partners. Europe has already said, you know, because Russia could cut off the natural gas supply to Europe. Europe does not have the wherewithal to heat their anything in the wintertime. Or any time of year, they depend 100% on Russian natural gas. And so, and that's, this has happened before during the Ukrainian deal. Russia basically turned off the valve from Russia because the pipeline went across the Ukraine. And so Europe was without natural gas. And that's probably not fun trying to live in some city in Europe with no heat during the winter. So Europe immediately said, this is going to hurt us, and we're not going along with this, even though they want the U.S. to pay for NATO in all of the defenses in case Russia kicks up and comes barreling across the Eastern Front there, as they call it, to take over Europe. That's a real threat for those people because they know that they would not have a, as they say, Chinaman's chance, to use a ethnic expression, excuse me, but they would not have a diddly of a chance if Russia decided to just drive in and take them over. They couldn't resist. They don't have anything there that would resist. And so just out of the goodness of the Russians' hearts, they don't go and take Europe. And believe me, the U.S. would not be able to go over and defend. It would be a real mess, believe me. It would be back to a land war with million-man armies crashing in the middle of the Eastern Front with tanks. And no, there would be no winners there, believe me. In today's world, nobody would be a winner. You could never, ever say, we won the war. Nope, not on that one. Anyway, I'm sorry for this diversion here, but very important, very stupid move on the part of Congress. And it was a aha, gotcha type of move. Congress trying to do something to harm Trump. And it's this whole, you know, scenario. But the bottom line is it's very negative. It's a very bad move. The United States is painting itself in a corner. Nobody will do business with the United States. And those countries are getting tough. When you take a country like Venezuela and you do sanctions, just like Cuba, made them tougher, made them better. It's like, no, your sanctions on those countries do not give you an upper hand. It doesn't do something positive for you. It makes your enemy tougher. It makes them more resilient. That makes them not dependent on you. It makes them thumb their nose at you. And everybody's thumbing their nose at the United States due to the, you know, so this sanctions on Russia, excuse me, it's already backfired. On a positive note, this is a great story. I love this story. The Virgin Rocket. Now, Virgin is the name that was picked up by Richard Branson. So he had Virgin Records, and then he had Virgin Airways, and then he had Virgin Galactic, which was the Burt Rutan effort, won the XPRIZE, etc. And now he has Virgin Orbit. And the center of this is a 747 that was a Boeing 747 decommissioned from his fleet of airplanes in his Virgin Air business. And he has his own airport that has been officially open now. The public was there at the grand opening, I think it was last December, out in Long Beach, which is in the heart of military-industrial complex world out there. You know, you got Disney World, and then you got military-industrial complex world, and Long Beach is like, you know, the center of it. So he's got his airport there, and the airplane they call Cosmic Girl, and it's being certified. It's got some preliminary certification from the FFA, or the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, I'm sorry. And so he's getting ready to launch payloads into outer space from a 747. Now, he had his White Knight, and you can look this up, look at the pictures. It's a vehicle built by Burt Rutan, funded by Richard Branson, and that's what they used. They had the White Knight 1, and then there's, I believe it's the White Knight 2. I think that's the same name, White Knight. But anyway, it's a carrier vehicle. That's all it is. And the middle tube on this, there's two outside tubes and then jet engines. So it's basically two split fuselages with four jet engines and wings. That's all it is. And then the center is the carrier for a rocket-like tube, which then they take up to, that vehicle can get up to 50,000 feet. And the military uses it quite a bit. My understanding, they rent this out to the military, which is funny because don't you think the military should do this? But there's a program in NASA and the military to not use runway to space because it's cheap. It's easy. They don't want to do that. They want to continue using rockets. And like I said, they don't have rockets. So they use this as a kind of a secretive way to get some stuff tested, especially reentry vehicles and other etc. But the idea is that this Cosmic Girl 747 is going to take a much bigger payload, and they load it under the wing. And what I've always said is, if you want a runway to launch, you know, runway to orbit is what it's called, and just have a giant tube with wings and jet engines and a tail, and in that tube you fit a rocket. Big, big, big rocket. And your advantage here is you can get the air-breathing jet engines up to 50,000 feet, not a problem. Just specialized, you know, engines that'll go up to that altitude. And it's really not a big order. I mean, it's not that big a deal. So you take this up to 50,000 feet, and that's about 10 miles. So you're a sixth of the way to orbit, but you've gotten through the very thick part of the atmosphere, and that's what the first stage, that big Saturn V, or when you see a rocket go off, that big first stage burns up by the time it gets up to 50,000 feet. And it's got to go slow, because the faster you go, the more wind resistance there is. Therefore, you're burning more fuel just to push it fast, so you go slow. That main rocket booster, that first stage, goes very slow. You want to keep it, you know, down to a couple hundred miles an hour max. And then once you get up to about 50,000 feet, you break off the first stage, and then the second stage takes over. It might be a little more than that, but basically, and then it goes down range, as they say. It turns kind of sideways and it starts picking up speed, because now it's becoming inserted into orbit. And to get into low Earth orbit, you got to get it up to 17,000 miles per hour. So anyway, the Cosmic Girl is to launch heavier payloads. And by the way, the military had this capability after World War II. they would take, there were the pilots, Chuck Yeager, and these guys that were the very first pilots into NASA. And they were test pilots, but they would go up on a B-52 bomber, basically, at the time. They would go up and have the X-series aircraft, and these were rocket planes. Basically, it was a little rocket with little wings on it, and they would drop it off and fly these things, cryogenic, in other words, they were not oxygen breathing, and fly these things. So that they were going at, you know, very high speeds, and that was going to be the way the military was going to go into space. And then there was a political decision made that they were going to go to rockets. Chuck Yeager and all the boys quit. And they just said, we're not going to sit in some tin can that we can't fly. We're pilots. So they quit. And so NASA went to astronauts, guys that just sat there strapped in, really didn't do anything, pushed a few buttons. You know, basically the spacecraft was a tin can that they were strapped into and really had no functionality in terms of pilots. So anyway, now Burt Rutan and Richard Branson getting back to this idea of piloted spacecraft. And I understand Burt Rutan has kind of stepped out. He's done his job. He's retired now. He's designing some personal aircraft, going back to what he did prior to all of this XPRIZE stuff and Richard Branson. Branson is the perfect angel investor. He loves what he does. He hires good people. He lets them do it and stays out of the way and just enjoys it. Every time you see him, he's got a smile on his face. I was down in the Caribbean one time in a boatyard, and he came walking through. He had shorts on. He looked like a hippie guy from the 1960s walking through there. And I go, God, that's Richard Branson. And, just hanging out. You know, a billionaire, he's got more money, and just is a very happy guy. But he's not hooked in like Elon Musk into the CIA, Google, Fidelity, military, all that stuff. You know, I think like what Musk is doing, but excuse me, he's signing on with the devil there, something Richard Branson does not do. And that's why Branson has had some accidents in his programs. Like, they were months away from being certified to take tourists into outer space, and he had a little accident. Ooh, a little accident killed one of his pilots, and they said, oh, no, can't have tourists in space. Nope, can't have anybody up there, Richard Branson. So anyway, he's getting back on track, but I hope he's learning that he was sabotaged. I hope he's learning this. If he doesn't, I hope he listens to this and gets a clue. But he's a smart guy. I suspect he probably knows, but it's not like he can go out and start accusing people. And wow, I am out of time. This is Jim McCanny. By the way, go to my webpage. That sale there, 10% plus extra 5% off, is ending. I just haven't had time to get there and take it down. By the way, I got a book coming out soon. Watch for that. The webpage, jmccsci.com. And also remember that my paid cast starting this week, the 10-part series, The Science of the Colburn. So go to the webpage, sign up for that. Talk to you soon. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.